All right, time to dive in. Today we're tackling underfill. You know, that frustrating issue in mold design. You've got this picture-perfect product in mind, but instead you end up with gaps and defects. Ugh, the frustration.
Yeah, underfill, it's a challenge for sure. Mm. In injection molding, it can really mess things up. The product's strength, how it looks, nobody wants to deal with that.
Exactly. And we've got a ton of research here all about solving it. Don't worry, we've sifted through it all and we're ready to share the good stuff. These articles all point to three main areas: gate design, runner systems, and then exhaust gas design. We're going to break them down. Hopefully you'll pick up some new tricks along the way.
It's like we're detectives on a case, right? We found our culprit, underfill. Now let's investigate those usual suspects.
I love that. Okay, so suspect number one, gate design. Seems basic, but that gate, that entry point for the molten material, it's kind of the unsung hero of mold filling.
It really is.
It's like the entrance to a party. If it's too small, everyone's stuck in a bottleneck.
Exactly. And all doorways aren't the same. Depending on what you're making, you might need a revolving door, maybe a sliding door, heck, even a trap door.
Okay, I see what you're getting at. So it's not just about make the gate bigger. It's about choosing the right kind of gate and putting it in the right spot.
Right. One of the articles talked about a company, they were having underfill issues with a plastic container, had a thin handle.
Oh, I can see how that would be tricky.
So what they did was they simply moved the gate closer to the handle, gave the molten plastic a straight shot, problem solved.
So it's all about figuring out how the material flows,
yeah,
right? And making sure it goes where it needs to go.
Yep. And speaking of flow, let's move on to suspect number two.
Oh.
The runner system. Think of it like the highway system, transporting that molten material from the injection point to those gates. And just like real highways, if there's congestion or bottlenecks, you're going to have problems.
Okay. So how do we avoid rush hour in our runner systems?
Well, one way is to shorten the runner length. Shorter runner means less travel time for the molten material. Less chance of it cooling down and hardening before it reaches the mold cavity.
Makes sense. Less time to get stuck in traffic.
Right. And it also helps to keep the pressure consistent, smoother flow.
What about the width of these metaphorical highways?
Yeah. Just like adding more lanes helps traffic move smoother, increasing the runner diameter can be really important, especially for products with thick walls. It lets more material flow through and ensures the mold fills up completely.
So we gotta find that sweet spot. Runner length and diameter, gotta get that flow just right. Now, these articles mention something called runner surface quality. I gotta admit, not quite sure what that means.
Ah, that's an important one that often gets overlooked. Imagine driving down a road, all bumpy with potholes. Lots of jolts and vibrations, right? Same thing happens with the molten plastic flowing through a rough runner. Friction hinders the flow, can even trap air bubbles.
So we want those runners smooth like glass. Brand new highway, no bumps.
Exactly. They polish the runner surfaces to a specific roughness. They call it raw. That can really reduce the friction, make things flow better.
Okay, so what kind of raw number are we aiming for here?
Well, one of the sources had an example. They polished the runners to a raw of 0.8 micrometers.
Wow, 0.8 micrometers. That's incredibly smooth.
It's tiny, microscopic even.
Yeah.
But it makes a huge difference. Lets that molten material glide through like a skater on perfectly smooth ice.
So we've looked at gate design, made those runners smooth. What else can we do to prevent underfill? I feel like we're forgetting something crucial.
Exhaust gas design. Our third suspect. We got to make sure that trapped air can get out of the mold as it fills. Imagine trying to fill a bottle with water, but there's no way for the air inside to escape. You're going to get a lot of resistance and air pockets.
Makes sense. So how do we make those escape routes for the air in our molds?
Think about designing a ventilation system for a building. You need those strategically placed vents and exhausts, right, to allow for good airflow. For molds, we do that by adding things like exhaust grooves or using breathable materials.
Breathable materials? Sounds interesting. Like those fancy athletic clothes that let your skin breathe.
Similar concept, but instead of sweat, we're dealing with air molecules. Some materials, certain types of steel, they have this porous structure that allows air to pass through.
So it's like the mold itself can breathe.
Exactly. They had a case study where they used breathable steel in a complex mold, had these tricky internal parts, and that breathable steel totally solved their underfill problems.
That's wild. Like having a built-in air filter right in the mold. Are there different kinds of breathable steel?
There are. Not all breathable steels are made the same. They have different levels of permeability, which basically means how easily air can pass through them. Some are made for really fast air removal. Others are more for a controlled release.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. You got to pick the right breathable steel for your specific mold and product.
Exactly. You want to make sure it's the right fit for your design.
This is really cool stuff, like a hidden world of materials and design that most people don't even realize exists.
Oh, and we're just getting started. There's so much more to explore.
Well, I am hooked. Can't wait to dig deeper into these exhaust gas design techniques.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so back to exhaust gas design. We're talking about breathable steel. Seems like a real game changer for those tricky molds, you know, the ones with those hard-to-reach spots inside.
Definitely opens up some new doors. But breathable steel isn't the only option for exhaust design. Don't forget about the good old-fashioned exhaust grooves.
Oh, right. Those channels carved into the mold so the air can escape. They seem almost too simple, but I guess they still get the job done, huh?
Simple can be effective. Think of it like this. You've got a narrow path, all winding, and you need to clear it out for smooth passage. You could just bulldoze the whole thing, but sometimes all you need are a few well-placed channels.
So those exhaust grooves, they're like those strategic channels, creating an easy escape route for the trapped air as that molten material flows in.
Precisely. And the cool thing is, you can tailor those exhaust grooves to each mold. Adjust the size, the depth, where you put them to get that air removal just right for different shapes and materials.
Reminds me of those ancient aqueducts, you know, carefully designed to carry water over long distances. Except here, we're channeling air, not water.
That's a great analogy. And just like with those aqueducts, designing effective exhaust grooves takes some careful planning. Got to understand how that air is going to flow.
The research mentioned something about putting exhaust grooves around those ejector pins. Is that pretty common?
It is. Ejector pins, they're the ones that push the finished product out of the mold. But they can also be little traps for air. So if you put those exhaust grooves around them, you're giving that trapped air a way out.
Smart. It's like setting up emergency exits for those air molecules. Got to plan ahead.
Right. And the size of those grooves really matters. Too small, they won't do much. Too big, and they could weaken the mold, maybe even let some of that molten material leak out.
So it's about finding that balance, right? The Goldilocks zone for those exhaust grooves. The research mentioned one case where this tiny 0.2 millimeter groove made all the difference. Seems incredibly precise.
Mold design, it's all about precision. Even small changes can have a big impact on the final product. In that case, that tiny groove, it vented a critical area, and they got rid of this underfill problem they had been struggling with.
Wow, it's amazing how such tiny tweaks can make such a difference. Shows how important it is to sweat the small stuff in mold design.
It does. And it's not just about the size of those exhaust features. Where you put them, the direction they face, that matters too. You got to think about how that molten material is going to flow and position those exhaust features where they'll be most effective.
It's like a game of chess, isn't it? Strategically placing your pieces to outmaneuver your opponent. Except here, our opponent is trapped air, and our pieces are those exhaust grooves and breathable steel.
I like that. It's all about strategy and precision. High stakes, too. You either get a perfect product or a defective one.
No pressure, then. We've been talking a lot about the mold itself. But what about the material we're actually molding? Does that affect underfill?
Oh, absolutely. Different materials flow differently. Some materials, they flow easily, like water, filling every little space. Others are thicker, more like honey. You need more force to push them through the mold.
So it's not just about the mold design. You got to pick the right material for the job, too.
Exactly. Understanding how that material behaves is key to getting the molding process right. Some materials, you might need to crank up the pressure or the temperature to get them to flow properly. Others are more sensitive to how quickly they cool down.
So there's this delicate balance between the mold design, the material you choose, and how you set up the whole process.
Everything's connected. You can't change one thing without thinking about how it's going to affect everything else.
What about those multi-material molds, you know, where you're injecting different materials into the same mold? I bet that adds a whole other level of complexity.
It does. Moldy material molding, that's a whole different ballgame. You really need a solid understanding of the science behind materials and how they flow. You got to consider how those different materials will interact, how thick they are, their melting points, how they'll flow and solidify together.
Sounds like you could easily mess things up if you're not careful.
You could, but when you get it right, multi-material molding opens up a ton of possibilities. You can create these really innovative products with unique properties.
So, high risk, high reward. Let's bring it back to our listeners. Someone's struggling with underfill. What are some key things they can do right now to try and fix it?
The biggest thing is to remember, underfill, it's not a dead end. It's a solvable problem. Take a systematic look at those three areas. Gate design, runner system, exhaust design. Figure out what's causing the problem, and then find the right solution.
It's like our detective work, right? Find the clues, get the evidence, and then use the right tools to solve the case.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to try things out. Experiment a bit. It might take a few tries to get the perfect solution.
And having a good understanding of how those materials behave, that's super important.
Absolutely. The more you know about your materials, the better you can design those molds and fine-tune that molding process.
So it takes knowledge, experience, and a little bit of trial and error.
And a good dose of curiosity. Never stop learning. Keep asking questions. Keep looking for new information.
Well said. Maybe we should take a closer look at some of those specific techniques for optimizing those exhaust features.
Let's do it. I'm sure our listeners are ready for the details.
All right, let's get specific with those exhaust features. We know they're important for venting that trapped air, and even tiny adjustments can make a big difference. So besides just changing the size and placement, what are some ways to optimize these things?
Well, there's this interesting technique called vacuum venting. Basically, you apply a vacuum to the mold cavity, you suck out the air while the molten material is flowing in.
So you're not just letting the air escape passively through those grooves or the breathable material, you're actively pulling it out with a vacuum.
Yep. It can be really helpful for molds with deep cavities or really complex shapes. You know, those tricky spots where traditional venting might not reach.
Right. I can see how that would be useful. But I imagine setting up a vacuum system adds a whole other level of complexity, right? And cost.
Yeah, true. It's not the answer for everything. But for those tough cases where those other venting methods just aren't cutting it, it can be a good solution. Better quality, fewer defects, maybe even faster production times.
So a trade-off, but sometimes it's worth it. We've talked a lot about the technical stuff, but let's think about the listener for a second. What are some common mistakes people make when they're trying to solve underfill problems?
I think one of the biggest mistakes is getting too focused on just one part of the mold design. They forget to look at the bigger picture. It's like trying to fix a leaky faucet by tightening one bolt, but you don't realize there's a crack in the pipe.
You might stop the leak temporarily, but you're not really fixing the problem.
Exactly. You got to look the whole system, the mold, the material, how everything's set up, even the environment. Got to see how they all work together.
Underfill, it's rarely just one thing, right? It's usually a combination of factors.
Right. And I see a lot of people who don't really understand the material they're molding.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Material selection, that's crucial. Each material, it flows differently. If you don't think about that when you're designing the mold and setting up the process, you're going to run into trouble.
It's like trying to bake a cake, but you don't know the difference between flour and sugar.
Uh-huh, yeah. You got to do your research. Talk to the experts. Test things out before you commit to making a whole bunch of products.
Testing. So important. It's one thing to design a mold on paper, but it's got to work in the real world.
Absolutely. Testing, that's how you know your design is solid. And you can catch problems before they become big headaches.
Okay, so for our listeners who are dealing with underfill, what are the key things to remember?
Well, first off, don't give up. Underfill, it can be solved. Go through those three main areas. Gate design, runner system, and exhaust design. Figure out what's causing the problem. Then you can find the right solution.
It's a process, right?
It is.
It's knowledge, experience, and a little bit of trial and error.
Right, and don't be afraid to think outside the box. Try something new. If you need help, ask an expert.
And test.
Definitely. Yeah. Testing, it'll save you a lot of trouble in the long run.
Okay, so to wrap up our deep dive into underfill, let's leave our listeners with something to think about. We've talked about fixing existing molds, but what about new molds? What can you do right from the start when you're designing a new mold to prevent underfill? How can you avoid this problem altogether?
That's a great question. It's all about designing with prevention in mind. If you think about all the things we've talked about, the gate placement, the runner system, the material, the exhaust design, you can build those solutions right into your design from the very beginning.
So you're minimizing the risk of underfill before it even becomes a problem.
Right.
Much easier to prevent a fire than to put one out. Well, on that note, we'll leave you to ponder those proactive solutions. This has been The Deep Dive. See you next time.